welcome to episode 60 of Did You Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. This season, I'm sharing new episodes every Monday discussing all things vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Natasha and Ed Tatton of Bread, a vegan bakery in Whistler, BC, Canada. Ed is a professional chef who attended culinary college and worked in high-end kitchens in the UK, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, but now specializes in making organic, naturally leavened sourdough. As co-owner of Bread Organic Sourdough with his wife, Natasha, Ed leads a small bakery team making and baking bread, pizza dough, and other small baked goods. These days, Ed's food is compassionately 100% plant-based, a movement he is passionately excited to be part of and help grow for the benefit of people, the planet, and the animals. Natasha is an English teacher turned bakery manager, animal rights advocate, and co-founder of Bread, along with Ed. In her life before Bread, Natasha taught English all over the world and now leads a small front-of-the-house team of cashiers and baristas. Taking on various food and beverage roles nurtured her desire to establish a vegan eatery to provide more compassionate food choices. If you love to eat, you are in for a treat. The way Natasha and Ed talk about food will leave you inspired to explore new and hopefully even more compassionate ways to feed and nourish yourself. Hey, Ed. Hey, Natasha. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Kimberly. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's so great to be sitting down with you both. So as we always start here on Did You Bring the Hummus, the very first thing I'd love to talk about is your vegan journey. Tell me how you got here.
I went vegan first in 2014. I'd spent the winter working in a ski school in Whistler. This is a ski resort town. And it was the first time I'd ever had to cook meat. I'd been pretty much vegetarian my whole life. Not strictly, but I'd never cooked meat really until I got to this job. I thought I was going to be supporting ski instructors on the slopes. But on day one, they were like, oh, you've got the most kitchen experience. So we're going to put you in the kitchen. And I really wasn't comfortable doing it, but I got my free ski pass. I got my free snowboard lessons. I had great friends around me and I thought, okay, I'll just do it for the season. And I started reading all the labels and all the food, didn't like what I was serving the kids, and started going to a juice bar at the bottom of the mountain every day after work. And it was like a vegan raw food salad bar as well, and started like meeting vegans and then eating vegan. And then they offered me a job after ski school was done in the summer, became kind of a raw vegan chef and started just preferring to eat that, and didn't want to eat animals at all, any animal products. And after a while, I started using the word vegan. It took me a little while, but I eventually started to adopt the word vegan. And then I told Ed I didn't want any animal products in the house, because by then I'd watched lots of documentaries. I was fully vegan and didn't want to be surrounded by it. I wanted it to be like my little oasis, my home. I wanted it to be like a little sanctuary. And so Ed wasn't vegan at the time. He was working in a restaurant, and a fine dining restaurant with lots of meat and fish on the menu, but he was very respectful of my choices.
Yeah. I've never been like, I wouldn't call myself a meathead, you know, like we ate a heavy vegetarian diet anyway. So when Natasha said, you know, I want to go vegan, I want to commit to this. I totally respect her decision. And it was only, you know, from what I'd seen and what I've heard since, not many people regret it. You know, if you go vegan, if you go plant-based, most people are saying, I feel good, I have more energy, you know, I've never felt healthier. So I was like, from my point of view, I'd had health conditions with my heart, so was happy to give up dairy, called myself an environmentalist. And for me, this was kind of like, okay, you know, am I really an environmentalist? Am I really an animal lover? So it started from a health point of view, and Natasha sort of gently pushing me in that direction. and occasionally eating meat when I went out for a special occasion, and sort of had that mentality, you know, if we all just ate it as a special occasion, we wouldn't be in the situation we are now with the environment. But then obviously animal welfare came into play, and then it's a whole different, you know, sort of conversation. You know, how do you respectfully kill an animal? You're still cutting its throat. So, you know, it was kind of like, I don't know, you just, when you open the tap, you know, just all this, you just can't stop but look at it, you know, find out more information and all these sorts of things. So maybe it took me 6 to 12 months later that I was sort of fully committed myself. And then by then we were on the journey of opening up the bakery and things like that. So it became easier.
Okay. So was the, do you think the plan was always to have the bakery be vegan since Natasha was already vegan, or was it maybe more vegetarian? What was the plan?
We were both vegan by the time we decided to open a bakery.
Oh, okay.
But actually I would say it wasn't so much that we had the idea of opening a bakery as Edward just started making bread for friends, and it just kind of grew into this big community project in a way. And it was the locals that were asking us if we could open a bakery because they wanted to buy Ed's bread on the regular. And we kind of thought about how we could do that. And the only way we could really see to do that was to sell our house and go hook, line and sinker straight into fully, you know, setting up a bakery. And because we were both ethical vegans by then, and what I mean by that is we weren't just eating plant-based, like a lot of people call themselves vegan, but we were fully eliminating animals in every sense. And we just couldn't sustain the idea of profiting from animal cruelty. Mm-hmm. And if you own your own business, then you've got the chance to align your work with your ethics. And most vegans I know don't have that. A lot of vegans I know work in restaurants that serve meat and fish, and they kind of think they have to do that because they need a job, and there's no vegan restaurants in our town. So we had the chance to actually start something that was vegan and feel good about coming to work every day. I couldn't stand the thought of serving someone or even making something for someone that wasn't vegan. So it was just so that we were comfortable with it, it had to be vegan. And we just thought, now we have to prove it can work as a vegan bakery in a ski resort. Like, who's ever heard of that? That there's nothing like it. I don't know any other vegan bakeries in any ski resorts. One of my friends said ski resorts are known for fondue and hot chocolate and not the vegan kind. And I think she's right. That's, you know, you don't expect that, a vegan bakery at the bottom of a ski gondola. But we already had community buy-in for the bread, and we thought, well, we'll just be vegan by stealth. At first, we kind of were quite subtle. We didn't say it too much. We kind of went for plant-based. And then we started to notice that people were misusing the term plant-based. There were products on the shelves in stores that had eggs in them, and they were using the word plant-based. And we thought, okay, so then it's 100% plant-based. And then eventually we've evolved into 100% plant-based and vegan friendly. And I did have one customer once question if everything was vegan. I said, yeah, look at the sign. And they said, well, it says vegan friendly. And I said, yep, we're vegan and we're friendly. And that's kind of, that's kind of how we feel about it these days. We're there to welcome everybody in and hopefully delight everybody. And when they realize it's all vegan, they're pleasantly surprised.
That's awesome. And, you know, I hear all the time from different business owners where they're trying out different ideas and just trying to figure out what the customers wanted, that you guys knew right from the start. And what a cool way to get into that. And then bread, like, I think people don't realize that so many breads are already vegan. So they're eating bread that's familiar to them, right? So you bring them in with something that they know, and maybe they've been eating their whole life. And then you can sneak in those vegan pastries, and before you know, they're hooked. And like, so often I hear someone say, well, if I could eat like this all the time, I'd be vegan, no problem. And the great thing is that they can, right? They can eat like that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like Tash said, at first it was like, you know, bread should be vegan, but they do, unfortunately, you do need to check the packets because they used, you know, dairy as preservatives and different sugars and things like that. So it was nice for us to make a product that was, you know, an age old, you know, sourdough been eaten for thousands of years, but then, like you said, add the extra sort of sweet treats and things like that and not have to put vegan at the beginning of every label because the whole shop is vegan. You know, if you have carrot cake or cookies, it's just labeled as that, not as the vegan option. So we're just trying to sort of normalize it in a way, and not make it, you know, people feel uncomfortable. Like Natasha said, everyone's welcome. It's tricky for us with celiacs and, you know, certain like allergies, like nuts and things like that. But as a generalization, we try and welcome everyone and sort of feed the community, as it were.
I would like to see a future where vegans don't have to be the one with the label. So for example, when I buy my beauty products, my toiletries, I always look for vegan and cruelty free. But actually, I would love to flip that and say this product was tested on monkeys, dogs, you know, and actually tell people what the truth is behind what they're buying. Why should we, as vegans who are trying to make ethical choices for our products and services, why should we be the ones to put some label on us like there's something wrong with us? There's nothing. What we're doing is what we perceive to be the right way, the best way, the nicest way, that we're not harming animals or the planet, or not intentionally. You know, sometimes it's, of course, unavoidable that, you know, everything a human does tends to have some sort of trail behind it. But as much as possible, we're eliminating suffering and cruelty. And yet, for most of the time, as vegans, we have to walk around looking for the label. I would like to see it the other way, where, you know, vegan is the norm. And that may be idealistic of me, but that's definitely what we're creating in our own business.
Well, I'm right there with you. What an incredible world that would be.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I don't think people would buy so many products if they actually knew what the truth was behind them. You know, like they do it with cigarettes nowadays, don't they? They put like nasty pictures of the lungs and let you know what the side effects are, but they don't tell you like when, like what animal testing or what animals have been killed, or like, for example, fur. There's no regulations on that. You could make a fur hat out of somebody's cat, and you can actually put the label mink on it, and then people will buy it. And for some reason, they think, oh, well, I'm happy to wear mink. I don't know why. But if it was a cat, they might think twice about it. But there's no regulations on that either. So I think that it would be great if we could bring in more regulations as well, so people, the consumer, was informed and could make better choices for themselves and everybody else.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think at the heart of humans, despite what we kind of see when we look out at the world, it's really easy to see all the really awful, cruel things that humans are capable of. But I think that we also can see on the other end of that spectrum what kindness and compassion and beauty humans can create and be as well. And I think that deep down, more of us than not have that beautiful, compassionate side. And it's just a matter of knowing. You know, I went vegetarian and when I was 20. I didn't go vegan until I was 34. So, you know, I spent 14 years eating a lot of cheese and not really paying attention to what I was really contributing to. But like once I faced it, I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. Like when I was vegetarian, I wasn't really big into cheese and eggs, but I did go for the full fat milk, the rich and creamy yogurts, the Greek yogurt. I did like certain things, halloumi cheese. I liked that melted. There was lots of things I did like that were very fatty. And now I still like fatty things, but I go for coconut fat rather than, you know, something from an animal. But if someone had told me when I was vegetarian that, oh, well, you know, they kill the baby as soon as it's born so they can take all the milk from the mother. That's the norm. Like even in nice places like New Zealand, it's very common that when the bobby calf is born, they batter it over the head to kill it. And that's just almost a standard practice throughout farming. And it's kind of almost perceived as this is the way it's done. And that's okay, because we've always done it like that. But I had no idea. I lived in New Zealand and drank loads of dairy. I had no idea that babies were dying for me to eat, drink their milk. People just have an almost blind conception that cows produce milk and don't think about, well, only because they're pregnant. And obviously there's a baby there. So if we're drinking all the milk, baby's not getting any. So what does that mean? And sometimes the babies are allowed to live, but they're giving a sort of unnatural diet to supplement the fact that we're taking the milk away. And I just think taking babies away from mothers is wrong. And I think all mammals, and maybe even other animals, but especially mammals, have a deep connection with their children, and they don't want them taken away. And the babies want to be with their mothers. And I just think as a sentient being, that we should respect that across all species, and not just for humans. Like, why do we have such a different moral code when it comes to creatures that are physiologically not that different from us? They're mammals. So I just think there's a massive disconnect, and it's not the people's fault, but anything we can do to nudge people, to help them in a kind way. Like, definitely people don't want to see horrific videos, for the most part, but it's also making them aware of the horrors without sort of trying to upset them, but trying to make them aware. And that's the thing, the careful trick of being an activist in the vegan world.
Yeah, I think so too. That's, you know, my approach is not to share graphic videos and photos and things like that. Someone asks, like, you know, the honesty that you just shared about the dairy industry, if someone were to ask me that, that's exactly what I'd tell them. And then, you know, I'd probably offer them some really tasty vegan food.
Food cuts through all the crap, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Doesn't people say they believe politically or religiously or whatever. If you can give someone something vegan that tastes nice, they'll want it again because it tastes nice. So that's what we're all about with our book, is showing people that you can make great vegan food that tastes good.
And who knew? So speaking of the cookbook, I was flipping through, and who knew that there were so many different things you could do with sourdough bread?
Yeah, totally. I mean, for me, a lot of, when we got the chance to, you know, write a cookbook, so many of my books that I have from these amazing bakers, you know, a lot of the time they're just sort of loaves and baguettes, and we kind of wanted to explore, you know, what else could we get in there? There's 100 recipes, so we can have fun and make all these different things like burger buns and crumpets and donuts, and, you know, really explore what we can do, but then also give people cakes and cookies and things to have with sourdough. So at first, 100 recipes, very daunting, but actually it gave us the freedom to explore it a little bit and not feel too confined to just doing a book on bread, you know, bread and loaves.
Yeah, and you did. And the photos are beautiful. Even the videos that you put up on Instagram, I sent a few of them to my husband because he loves ASMR. And there are some of your bread videos, the ones that don't have the music set to them, where, and just watching you and hearing like the sound of what you're doing, the mixer, or even just the loaf as you're kneading it. And it's just, I think you might have started a whole other part of the internet. Like,
yeah, I've been playing with that quite a bit recently. I think that's, I'm moving in that direction. Like, I get a lot of people that like the sort of soundtracks that we put to it. I'm really big into hip hop, old school and newer stuff. But yeah, it's kind of fun to have the noises of the bakery and, like you said, like the dough or whisking or something like that. I feel like it makes people more connected. We had customers come in, they're like, oh, I followed you for years. Like, I feel like I know you, because sometimes I serve at the bakery. And then she said, well, I feel like I know like your torso or your apron or your hands. Like, you don't always show your face, but I feel like it's just being honest and showing people as much as we can, you know, with sort of tutorial style videos. And that sort of came around with the introduction of Reels to Instagram, but also through COVID, you know, people taking more of an interest with baking, making sourdough, and making it as easy as possible for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely makes it, I think, more normal. So for people who are not vegan and they find out that yours is a vegan bakery, maybe they would be like, oh, maybe they'd be surprised by how normal things seem because you're just making bread. There's just these amazing videos of you making bread, making, sweet treats. And they look just like sweet treats that you'd see at any regular bakery, like so it is normalizing. One of the things that we talked about when we first met in our pre-podcast talk was how important it is to you guys to create that environment where not just vegans feel comfortable, but pre-vegans feel comfortable coming in, exploring your space, getting to know the food that you're serving, and getting to know kind of what being vegan is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my sort of fine dining chef background, we, all when we're creating a dish, we always think about obviously how it's going to look. Presentation we eat with our eyes is the first point of call. So we wanted to make it, not just sort of a boring muffin or cookie, or we always try and present things, we use seasonal products. So when someone comes in the summer, very colorful display, we're supporting local farms using seasonal produce. Not overcomplicating it and not using loads of weird vegan products. A lot of the food is sort of natural maple syrup, coconut sugar, coconut oil, oat milk, these sorts of things. They are becoming more normal. Even using organic Canadian flaxseed as our egg replacer, we're not sort of buying in some factory made, fake egg replacer that a lot of people are scared of, because they don't trust what's in that. So we try and just keep it as simple as we can and make it just tasty food.
That's the key, right?
There is a perception that vegan food is overly processed. I think that some of this have stemmed from the mock meats that are out there. And I've spoken to meat eaters who say, more or less that they'd rather eat like bacon or, from a pig because they know where it's, this is what they say, they know what it is, where it's from. They don't want to eat any processed food, but it's all total crap really, because bacon is processed. And I've tried to explain this to people, like there's salt, sugar, fat added to bacon, coloring to make it pinker. And I'm like, when you talk about processed food, it's not a one and done label, because try and explain to someone like a smoothie is a processed food. So, if you take a whole food like an orange and then blend it, now you've put it through a process. So it's also educating people on like what processed means and that there's different levels of processed food. And actually, our sourdough bread, any bread is processed food, because you can't go out in nature and pick a loaf of bread off a tree. You have to obviously pick the wheat, grind the wheat, mill the wheat rather, and then put it, add it with water, leave it to ferment, or add yeast to it. We don't add yeast to our bread because it is true naturally leavened sourdough. And it's just kind of like educating people on what these terms mean. Another one is the word protein. A lot of people are looking for high protein at the same time they're gluten free and don't realize that gluten is a protein, it's plant protein. So there's a whole crazy concept there. And I've noticed also in restaurants now, they don't, or supermarkets, they don't talk about meat so much. They just refer to it as protein, as though if you don't eat meat, you don't get any protein, which is a really strange concept, because, how have I been vegan for 10 years if I'm not getting any protein? Like it's kind of bizarre, but there's a lot of labels and a lot of confusion, and people really don't know where to start. So we hope that we can help people along the way.
Yeah. I think too that the plant-based community, I think, isn't doing any favors that way with the processed, and it's almost like they pit themselves against vegans, and they kind of put themselves at a higher like they think they're better than vegans because they're eating, only whole food, plant-based. And even some of them are not, their meal is plant-based, so they might still be animal products in some of the things they eat here and there. But they also are like, nothing I eat is processed. Vegans only eat junk food. It totally ignoring the fact that veganism includes your diet, but is not a diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's a lifestyle. So we make sure, you know, at the bakery, our packaging, you know, then the glues that we use are, you know, plant-based, that, you know, they're not coming from any sort of animals. The chemicals, the cleaning chemicals we use, it's a lifestyle choice, like you said, across the board. But we're not expecting our customers to be, you know, vegan or put any sort of label on themselves. So I think it's just inclusion. Is not pointing the finger at anyone. Everyone's on a journey. And this cookbook is for people that can't come to our bakery, that want to try these recipes out at home. Maybe one day they can come and visit us in Whistler. We're both from the UK, so we're actually on our way next week to the UK to sort of do promotion with the book, which is really exciting. So we're really hoping that this will open up, you know, more people, you know, to try out plant-based baking, because there's so many books out there that are sort of vegan cookery, mm-hmm. you know, making soups and all these sort of salads and things like that, but there's not much literature on vegan baking. So hopefully it's the start of, you know, a lot more to come.
I think people who get their hands on your book are going to be very lucky, because there are photos. So there's the description of how to make the sourdough, get the starter going. But then there are photos of you, like, step by step with the mm-hmm. dough. And it just, for someone who might feel like it's intimidating,
mm-hmm.
It's so well laid out in the cookbook to really help people see it, whether, you know, they're visual. And I think you even mentioned that there's videos on YouTube that make it easy to kind of, to get through the process. But I was really excited looking, because I have, during COVID, you know, there were a bunch of people that were like, oh, I'm making sourdough starter and I'm going to start baking my own bread. And I couldn't get it going, you know? And so I've been kind of intimidated to try it since then, but going through your book and spending time really looking at the photos, I feel a lot better and feel like I'm capable. So once I've got my successful sourdough starter and my first loaf, I will definitely be sending you guys photos.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that feedback. Yeah, we really put time into sort of doing the process shots, taking people through, building their confidence. And I think also it's really important for people when they are making a sourdough culture to take their time with it and not jump into making a loaf of bread straight away, because actually it takes at least 2 weeks before it's mature enough to be able to leaven a loaf. So what we've done in the book is we've got a zero waste section, because as you're feeding the sourdough starter, you have discard. So you have a culture, and when we talk about feeding it, we're adding flour and water, but we have some leftover. For example, if we have 200 grams of sourdough starter, we may only need 50 grams of that to put in, you know, and refresh. So what can we do with that leftover? Well, we can make pancakes and waffles and crackers and things like that. So I feel like it's important for people not to rush in and feel disheartened when their bread doesn't work. When I created a new sourdough culture before we opened the bakery, I did that 3 months before we were opening the bakery to allow it to mature. Mm-hmm. And even it can take, you know, 6 months to a year to really sort of develop this. The microorganisms are very complex that we can't fully understand until we get into a rhythm with them. Mm. And that is really important to work with your schedule. If you're making bread once a week or every day, like myself, they will adjust to temperatures and times.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You can see how I sort of geek out now, and it's like I still learn stuff every day. Sometimes I say it to Natasha and I can tell she glazes over and she's always talking about bread again.
He's a wheat geek. He's got a tattoo on his arm of all these different ancient grains, and the tattooist called him a wheat geek, and that's exactly what he is. But actually, just listening to you talk about the intimidation from making sourdough, we knew that it is an art and a science and another level of baking that is very simple in theory. Like, you can read all the instructions, flour, water, salt. I mean, how hard can it be? But then in practice, you know, there are shaping techniques and there's Ed will like smell and taste the dough, take its temperature. You know, there's so many senses that you can employ to make your sourdough. And so we didn't want to write a book that was strictly sourdough because we didn't want to put people off and think, oh, I can't do that. That's too hard. That's why we made the book about half sourdough and half everything else that's not sourdough, like the cakes, the cookies, the muffins, the scones, and lots of other things. We have accompaniments as well, like dips and things. And then
hummus.
And even a hummus cookie. We've put lots of other things in the book because we don't want this just to be a sourdough book or just to be about cakes or desserts. We want this to be a nice, well-rounded book that you can dip in and out of throughout the year for different occasions, for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, snacks. We want this to be a book that people will just have as a go-to. I would almost compare it in some way to what Angela Liddon did with Oh She Glows, or Deliciously Ella did with her book, because those are books that have, they're more like sort of everyday food focused, but they've got lots of different types of things like snacks and soups and salads. And we wanted a book that was a bit like that, where you could, but it's more baking focused. So we want this book to appeal to everyone. And don't feel that if you're intimidated by the sourdough, you don't have to start there. There's plenty of other things in the book for you. But when you're ready, there's the sourdough guide. You can read about it. You can maybe have a go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I loved your description of getting that sourdough started, because it sounds like you kind of can get lost in a flow with it and you start to really connect in a different way, which I think is so important with our food. And it's something that we have been missing for so long. You know, humans have just been, I think the last 50, 60, 70 years, maybe, I always forget how far away from like the 50s we are, because I still feel like the 90s was 10 years ago. but yeah, we're so like each year, the more convenience food, the more packaged food that comes out, the more dyes and chemicals that get put into things. Our bodies don't know how to react to these things. And I think it takes us further and further away from food that our bodies really are craving, really need. And listening to you explain the sourdough process really made me feel like this connection is established with your food. And there's just a deeper understanding of what you're eating.
Yeah, I think unfortunately we've been brainwashed into thinking that bread is bad for us. A lot of people really, and a lot of bread is bad for us, to be fair. You know, if you go into the store and you look on the back of a packet, a lot of, you know, that sandwich style sliced bread in plastic has got 25 to 35 ingredients. Yes, that bread is bad for us. Why is it in your cupboard after 3 weeks and it hasn't gone moldy and it's still fine? If you search out good sourdough made with organic whole grain, that is very good for us. And there's a lot of centurions around the world in blue zones that are eating that on a daily basis in places like Italy and living a healthy, well-rounded lifestyle. You know, I compare sourdough, you have a sourdough culture, to someone that has plants in their house and has to water them daily, plays the music, grows their own vegetables. Someone that's in tune with their diet and is really invested in what they're putting into their body, that is such an investment that is only, you're only going to be rewarded for. So I think if we're spending money, like a lot of the time I'm like, oh, we don't have any money, because we choose to spend a lot of our money on good quality organic food. And that's a good thing. You know, if you are not able to travel, or you're not able to do, you know, buy expensive clothes, but you're investing in yourself and feeding yourself correctly. Like you said, a lot of vegans, you know, they get that stigma of eating junk food. We all need to treat ourselves, but you know, I've heard a lot of people say 80-20, 80% whole food and 20% reward yourself, you know, have some chocolate or have, you know, some French fries. Of course, it makes us feel good, but it's all about balance.
I love that. So you mentioned your hummus cookie, and when we talked earlier, you also mentioned that hummus saved your business. Tell me what you meant by that.
So when we first opened our store in 2019, we just kind of sold bread and some treats and coffee. And then obviously that pandemic came along in 2020. We can't forget COVID-19. And we kind of had to shut our bakery for a few months in the lockdown, the initial lockdown, where nobody knew really what COVID was, how dangerous it was, if they would get it and all of that. And we laid off our staff, as most businesses did, under government kind of guidelines. And we started selling, Ed and I, just kind of selling once a week to our locals. And we were selling lots of bread. And also there was a shortage of flour. People started panic buying at the grocery stores. And so we realized that we had to start selling flour. And then we started thinking, like, what else can we make that's kind of a bit more pandemic friendly? Like, people are eating at home, but a lot of people sadly don't know how to cook or feed themselves properly. A lot of people were used to eating out and most of the restaurants were shut. So we started making hummus and selling olives alongside our bread, and kind of took more of like a deli kind of concept. And it started selling really well. So we kept it going throughout the pandemic. And when we reopened our store, we started doing this as an upsell. So when people bought, and this still to this day, when people buy a loaf of bread, the cashier will always ask, do you need any house-made organic hummus or marinated olives with your bread today? And a lot of people say, yes, yes, please. And we managed to increase our spend per head. So pre-pandemic, the average spend in our bakery was $10. And post-pandemic, it's $20. And it's literally because of the upselling of the hummus and olives. So we have this joke, because hummus is like a quintessentially vegan, iconic food, that hummus saved our business, because, you know, we're a lot more profitable having a $20 spend than having a $10 spend. And that's allowed us to do other things by being more profitable. We've become a B Corp certified business. We donate 1% of our revenue to animal and environmental causes. And having a bit more money in the banks also allowed us to pay our staff better, have like pension plans and health and wellness benefits and all these other great things that we always wanted to have. Mm-hmm. But when we're a new business, we couldn't afford. Yeah. So hummus literally saved our business and made it a whole lot better. And that's the joke of it.
Look at that. I love it. So everyone going to get bread, make sure you get the hummus, because listen to all the amazing things that you guys are doing with that extra money coming in. That is so beautiful. And I love it. Hummus really, you know, the reason why the podcast is called Did You Bring the Hummus is because that's the joke, right? The vegan shows up, they bring hummus, or the person hosting the party knows, well, vegans can eat this. And so there's hummus everywhere. And yeah, it really, it's a staple because it's so perfect, I think.
But I like it. It's tasty. Yeah. I eat a lot of it still every day. Like, I'd say I eat hummus most days.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I'm a pretty active home cook. Like, we typically have like 3 homemade meals a day. But if for some reason I haven't got lunch together, I'll literally just grab a carrot and a celery stick and just chop it up in half and then just dunk it in hummus. And that's, you know, such an easy lunch to kind of put together. I'd much rather do that than, you know, go to a burger van or whatever other people do. And it's super healthy and nutritious. So yeah, we love hummus.
Yeah. Is the hummus that that you started with, is that the recipe that's in the cookbook?
Oh yeah.
Ah, well, awesome.
Yeah, so it's heavy on tahini. We use local garlic. So we're actually in garlic processing time at the moment because it's like, you know, available now for a couple of months from the local farm. So we literally process this amazing, they're huge cloves, cost us 5 times the amount that we could buy sort of Chinese garlic for. But we choose that because, like all our products, we want to use the best products we can and then charge what we need to charge instead of sort of trying to make it as cheap as possible. We choose to make it as best as possible and just make a profit on that, not being greedy, but people are, oh, how can you put so many for example, pecans in that cinnamon bun. It's like, well, that's how I want it to taste. So, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of choose that direction instead of scrimping. We sort of make the product how we want it to taste and then cost it out.
That's wonderful. I think people expect food to be cheap because there are so many places where food is cheap. But mm-hmm. when you balance out the cost of the healthcare that you need mm-hmm. after eating such cheap food for so long, when you have the ability to spend, you know, I'll just throw a number out there, $8 on a muffin mm-hmm. because that muffin is made with local ingredients, it's quality. It's not like a $3 muffin. Like there's a difference in the experience of it all and the care Perfect. That you're showing yourself and the ability to pay everyone involved from the farm all the way through. And I think that idea gets lost on a lot of people because they just think, well, food should be cheap.
Totally. But yeah. And I feel like when you get like a six pack of something, cookies or muffins, like you said, and they are cheaper, sometimes it's easy just to eat like three of them. Whereas yeah. if you have spent a bit more, we all need to slow down a bit anyway, especially with our eating, yeah. you know, sit down and appreciate that food. Then I think you enjoy it more and you probably don't feel the need to eat two or three because it has got more whole grain in there or more, you know, natural ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to save money is to make it yourself.
Yes.
Rather than buying it out. And especially nowadays with a lot of food and beverage operators, the costs of doing business have gone up so much. And there's a lot of people struggling to find staff these days, all across the world. This isn't a geographic issue. There's many reasons for this. I know in the UK, a lot of the restaurants are struggling because of Brexit. There's other political challenges all over the place. Canada at the moment are trying to let in loads of immigrants. They're actually opening up more and more work permits to try and get more foreign labor in because the baby boomers are leaving the workforce and there's a huge deficit in the workforce. So it's getting more and more competitive to find staff. And now restaurants are having to pay. Before they would pay quite low wages with the idea in North America that the customer would tip, you know, 20 or 25% or something. But actually, as the costs are going up, the consumer, we've noticed in Whistler, a lot of the servers are saying that people aren't tipping as much now because the cost of the meal's gone up so much. They don't want to tip. And so the restaurants are then having to compensate by actually paying a decent wage, a decent salary. And so all of this is causing the consumer to spend a lot more when they go out. And it doesn't always guarantee better quality, unfortunately. And right. so if money is an issue, then grow your own food, make your own food. And again, in this book, that's what we're trying to help people with. And foraging as well is one of our favorite things to do when we have free time. So we've put in some recipes that include ingredients like that, like foraging blackberries, for example. It's such a fun activity to do with kids as well. Even though you get scratched completely, you kind of don't mind if you've got blackberries at the end.
Yeah.
And there's a phenomenal sourdough sticky bun in the book with foraged blackberries and walnuts. That's one of my personal favorite recipes.
We'll check that out. We have a local farm near us where their focus is on the nutrients in the soil,
mm-hmm.
creating awesome. The nutrients in your food, right? And so they're very focused. They are organic and certified and all, but they were doing all this before. And they also forage. So sometimes they'll be like, we know what to expect each week when we're there. We know what they're growing. They keep us updated. But then suddenly they'll just be like a surprise thing. Like there was lovage was there one day. And apparently in New Jersey, lovage is just everywhere, like along the roads. And you can just walk by and just take a bunch and nobody cares. Nobody notices. And it's so good in like salads and you can put it in soups. And it's just really fun to discover that stuff.
Yeah. Totally. And it's good because it's local. That's the thing. Like forage food, obviously, you need to be careful and like know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of information and people out there that you can sort of like talk to. And like you said, or go and buy from like a professional forager. But it's the same basis as like what people say about honey. You know, we don't eat honey, but like eating food that's been pollinated and grown in your local area, fruits and vegetables, mushrooms, anything like that is really good for us.
So I've got one more question for you, even though we talked about it a little bit, but I end every episode where I want to know your favorite way to eat hummus or your favorite hummus recipe.
I think for us, to be honest, we're quite simple people, and just hummus on a slice of sourdough is just the best. Perhaps for me, like a rye sourdough, so more like a German style bread, a nice seedy rye. We do one with five seeds: pumpkin, sesame, sunflower, flax, and poppy seed, and 100% rye flour, and then it's just water and sea salt. And that with hummus, and then I like to also sprout my own seeds. And so this is another thing that we talk about in the book and we do in the bakery, is sprouting. So if you want organic, fresh, live food that's very, very nutritious for you, like broccoli sprouts contain 200 times more of this naturally occurring chemical, I think it is, but it's meant to be anti-cancer. And you can eat broccoli. I think a lot of people know broccoli is good for fighting cancer, but on preventing it. But actually, broccoli sprouts contain 200 times more of this. And so you can sprout them really cheaply. Like, you can buy a bag of sprouting seeds on the internet. I think one of the sources in the States is sproutman.com. And there's lots of other whole food suppliers. And I keep bags of these in my freezer, just put them in a jar of water and then rinse them a couple times a day. And within about 4 days, I've got these fresh salad sprouts, and I put those on top of the hummus. And sometimes I finish it with a little bit of black sesame and maybe even some blended up seaweed, like nori sheets. You can make a really nice seasoning. And that's probably my favorite way to have. I mean, that's like
that's very in depth.
That's very bougie, isn't it?
Yeah, she could have just said that on rye.
And then, I started that by saying I'm very simple, and then ended it by getting very elaborate. But I was just kind of went in a rabbit hole then of like how I would elevate this breakfast.
I would agree. I'll simplify everything that Natasha said, but with chili, like chili sauce.
I knew you were
something like that. I
be
like
spiced boy.
Yeah, just because it's very creamy hummus. So I like to have that sort of kick with some fresh, like sliced cucumber or tomatoes, with some arugula, some rocket, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, since moving to North, I love mustard. But since moving to Canada, I'm definitely in the hot sauce train. I love hot sauce with most meals.
Dad has hot sauce or mustard. He'll literally look at the meal and go, is it hot sauce or mustard?
Yeah, condiments.
And have one or the other with it. Something spicy or wasabi, obviously, if it's like a Japanese dish or something. But you always have to have some spicy element. Me, I'm not so spicy. I'm spicy enough, naturally. So I don't go spicy.
You know, condiments. Condiments are key. It's like seasoning.
They are.
Definitely. I think people are missing out. I love all that. Like pickled ginger or, hot sauce or mustard. Or like now Hellman's make an incredible vegan mayonnaise. It's like exactly the same. So,
yeah.
We often talk about, like, if we went with sourdough, our next project could be like a really good sandwich shop. I make the bread and then make, you know, these incredible sandwiches to order. But I think we'd just end up eating so many.
That does sound pretty delicious.
As Ed mentioned earlier in the show, we're really into textures. And when you're making hummus at home, a really nice thing is to reserve just a few of the chickpeas. And then you can add them to the hummus at the end as a whole chickpea topping. And that's really nice as well with hummus. And Ed, you'll often put like sesame seeds on top as well. So it's not just like smooth hummus. There's some texture in there. And that's really nice.
Yeah. Make it a little more interesting, right? Like you said, Ed, we eat with our eyes.
Yeah. Totally.
Natasha, Ed, this has been wonderful. I can't wait for the world to hear this interview and for your book. Your book is out on November 7th, right?
Yeah, that's right.
November 7th, big day. Fantastic. But you can order it from anywhere you can buy books. It's available even before November the 7th to pre-order.
Awesome.
Amazon or your local bookstore, wherever you are.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely include some links in the show notes. Thank you both so much. It's been really wonderful connecting with you today.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Thanks, Kimberly.
Welcome back. Are you heading to your favorite book retailer's website to order a copy of Bread right now? I get it. I cannot wait to eat some hummus cookies. To connect with Ed and Natasha, check out their website, edsbread.com, Instagram at eds_bread, and Facebook, Bread Organic Sourdough. Of course, as always, you'll find these links in the show notes. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating and leave a review. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. Be sure to share these episodes with your friends. If you're finding something good here, they will too. If you're a vegan or you know a vegan who'd be a great fit for the podcast, follow the Be a Guest link in the show notes. Fill out the quiz and I'll be in touch. I also have a new freebie on my website. Sign up for my mailing list and get a PDF of 3 amazing vegan recipes. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.